And we're back. Thanks for staying tuned to WVFF 97.7 FM, and now more true crime in the Lowcountry.
When you see that kind of transaction, anybody looking at that says you're trying to hide assets for some reason. You're hiding them from some creditor. You think that whoever's name you're putting it in is safe somehow. Anyway, so it's always an interesting conveyance. It's always a manipulation of some kind, sometimes perfectly legal, by the way, and it may have been perfectly legal. Alec actually addressed it that Barrett owed him money, and so he agreed to the transfer of Moselle to Alec. There wasn't a sleight of hand or nefarious in any way. But let's get back to this. So don't we know something about tow trucks, that they're sort of historically somehow involved in transportation of drugs?
And it's hard for me to get information on this, but here's what I've been told by more than two people. In the state of South Carolina, if you're a tow truck driver and you're towing a vehicle and you're stopped by the police, and that vehicle that you're towing has drugs inside the vehicle, you, the tow truck driver, are not responsible for said drugs.
How cool is that? How cool is that?
Because technically it's not your property. You may be in possession.
Frank is a little opportunist.
Wow.
You see that? Immediately I connect with him. So
wow.
I guess if you want to distribute drugs and kind of not get hassled a lot by law enforcement, stick it in a vehicle that you don't own, maybe a vehicle that nobody really owns. I don't know. Who cares? But move it around in that vehicle that you're towing behind your tow truck.
Wow.
Is that kind of where we're going with this? So, a tow truck might be an integral part of the distribution of drugs. Mm-hmm. But what kind of drugs are we talking about here? Are we talking about opioids and fentanyl and stuff? What are we talking about? It's not marijuana.
It's more.
Because you can grow what?
We can't grow in South Carolina.
Wait a minute. Say that again. What?
I said you can't grow marijuana in South Carolina. So.
Whoa. I beg to differ. I'm saying that South Carolina is a great place to grow pot.
But you have no information, no personal.
Let me make some context into that. The state of South Carolina and its law enforcement division do not allow marijuana to be grown and sold.
They do allow hemp, and there's just been a case in court where a guy's crop was destroyed by...
Oh, I remember that case.
Right, and...
By sled.
And it was destroyed by sled, and he brought an action against sled because he contended it was a legal crop. So...
and I think a judge actually... the head of SLED for some sort of misappropriation in that particular case and destroying evidence or something. I don't know, but a judge
sided with the grower.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get back to this. So if you've got this property on St. Helens or St. Helene's, whatever it's called, island,
yeah.
And it's surrounded by massive chain link fences and stuff, and pretty much and maybe raise a wire on the top of the chain link, and it kind of says to the world, keep out. And then you've got tow trucks coming and going. That you, if you're interested in investigating drugs, this might be an epicenter. If you could, get a drone that you can sit 10 miles away from it and fly it over that space, but don't go anywhere near to it. Where anybody can catch you on a camera and say, hey.
Hey, you guys see me spinning the wheel here? We're trying to get back on track.
Absolutely.
Well, I got a bigger drone.
Well, this is the track. Now, listen, this is the track where it's going to go. The reason that I like to be a little off track is this story has always had this huge hole in it, even at Alex's trial. What the hell? Where was he getting these drugs? It's a lot of money running through Alec Murdoch one way or another. He had to be part of the sale and distribution of drugs. He wasn't spending all this money on personal consumption. It just didn't make any sense. So I like the idea that Jim is whether he intends to. Maybe he's just stumbling onto stuff. I'm not even sure how much this is all intentional. But I like that somebody's finally looking into it, because nobody really has, and it's always been that glaring piece of the puzzle that's missing in what in the world was Alex Murdoch really doing. And maybe it's because it touches so many people. Because, you know, I'm thinking that kids that do drugs, you know, do drugs. And it all comes from somewhere. There's the, at the heart of everybody doing drugs is some criminal action in a supply chain that made those drugs available to them. It's always going to be the source of murder and crime. You know, it is crime. And it's and murder and death and stuff are part of that criminal enterprise. Anyway, so let's get back to Patrick. And...
All right, let's talk. All right, go ahead.
So there's the friend group, right? We talked about the friend group, and we got to connect the dots. But before you start connecting the dots to Stephen Smith, you have to ask yourself the question about Paul Murdoch. And why kill Paul Murdoch? Why silence Paul Murdoch is a better question. Do you remember the 911 call when Alex called 911? And he was kind of talking to himself. And he said this sentence, and it's always resonated with me. And he says, "Paul, why did you have to get involved?"
Yeah.
Now, he didn't expand upon that any time afterward. And I wish the state would have asked him, like, get involved with what? But that's what he was overheard saying.
I think they didn't ask because they knew the answer. That answer led directly to a subject matter that we're talking about, we just were talking about, that the state didn't want to go anywhere near. Because that's what he had to get involved with.
What did Paul get involved with? Was it the boat crash?
Drugs.
Was it drugs? Was it knowledge of the Stephen Smith case?
No, it was drugs.
In September 2020, we talk about there was a boat crash case. There was the lawsuit filed by the Beach family. You know, it was against Paul, Alec, and Buster at the time. And, of course, it was
filed. That lawsuit was filed before Paul was even charged. Did you know that? The civil lawsuit was filed before Paul was even charged. It was filed in 2019. But, yeah.
In fact, I was at Oyster Creek 2 days ago. What's today? Wednesday? No. I was at Monday night, 2 days ago. I was at Archer's Creek. And let me tell you, if I'm stone sober and it's bright daylight, I am going underneath Archer's Creek at a very slow pace. Because in the pictures that I've seen, I did not realize that the pylons that are holding up this bridge were so close together that literally a wide boat can't even make it through there. It's very narrow, and I have pictures of it. I'm going to be posting on ccnews.com later today in an article I'm doing. But to go through there at 20, 25 miles an hour like they did was absolutely stupid.
All right, let me just throw something at you.
But he didn't go through it. He hit the dolphin piling, backed off of it slightly, went forward, he hit the bridge.
Depending,
then took a sharp left turn.
We'd have to really look at the tide charts, all right? And the reason I say look at the tide charts is when the water rips through there, you have to maintain some kind of speed. Because if you're running against the tide, if you're not running at some kind of speed, you'll be going backwards, all right?
Understood.
And if you're running with the tide, all right, it's very easy for the tide to carry you and lose control of the boat. So it's a two-edged sword. Under any circumstances, that is not a very friendly piece of water. All right?
Wow.
No, and when I was there,
and so we asked about that a lot. No, wait a minute, Jim. When we were covering this, when Elaine Greenwood was covering this on YouTube, because nobody had information about it, and we were just too incompetent to find it for ourselves, we don't know. Was it high tide? Was it low tide? What was the tide like? And what Frank is saying about the dangers, well, we don't boat. I know more about boating in the last 18 months or 8 months, I guess, than I knew in my entire life. So at the time, we always expected that some news outlet would get some credible expert to say, well, look, here is definitively the tide. I agree. It's in state records. There's no question. But that there would be some analysis of this to tell us, here's what happened. Because I think that this removes some of the culpability. It's not evil Paul Murdoch doing something bad with the boat one way or another. He's drunk, but they're all drunk. And apparently they didn't have to be that drunk to be a danger to themselves going, trying to pass under that Archer Creek Bridge, period. You just said it. Even in bright daylight, it's a danger. And on a boat that had no running lights and in the dark, what was it, 2 o'clock? It was 2:21 in the morning. They hit the dolphin piling at 2:20 and the bridge at 2:21 in the morning. It's pitch dark, and it was foggy that night, foggy. So, yeah. I mean, they had literally no chance to get home safely. None. Zero.
No.
But anyway, keep going. You're there. I want to see your pictures. I want to see all of them. What?
Yeah. It's great. So Archer's Creek. But you have to ask yourself, and I'm going to go down to that and then go down this roadway here with Paul. You have to ask yourself, did Paul get himself, and I say himself, involved in his own defense strategy? And I'm not talking about sitting down with Jim Griffin and Descartes Poupian. I'm talking about taking it upon himself. Because after all, if Paul was found guilty, he faced mandatory prison time. Not something that a judge can give him, you know, time served, or in which he didn't serve any. But, you know, it's mandatory prison time. So there's no more college, no more friends, no more Moselle, no more money, no more granddaddy, no more daddy.
Jim, Paul, more than anybody alive, knew that mandatory this and mandatory that doesn't mean a lot, especially with his grandpa's, you know, his grandpa was a solicitor. This is in the 14th Solicitor's District. He's had an iron-fisted control for generations. The Murdoch family has. He's not afraid of mandatory in the sense that you and I are. I don't think Paul thought that way. I think Paul thought, well, a daddy and grandpa will take care of this. I'm not even worried about it. You know, you talk about this a lot, that Paul depended upon grandpa and dad to get him out of stuff. He didn't sit there and strategize with them. He just knew that the phone call to grandpa, Randolph III, or to dad, got him out of stuff. I think that if you look at the video of Paul at that sentencing, at the hearing where he's charged, he looks calm, he looks under control, he looks like he's been well coached, and he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do.
I disagree with you. I think he looks scared.
I don't think so at all. I think he was told by his grandparents, you don't say anything, keep your head down, you do what we tell you. He didn't have some outrageous outburst, he didn't act out. You know what happens when people go to those kinds of hearings? They act out. They respond. They do something that media catches and exploits. I think Paul looks coached, and he looked like an obedient child. He looked like exactly how Paul was described. He had absolute faith.
You can say that, but every attorney I've ever spoken to in my life about anything will tell you, you have no idea what a judge is going to do. You have no idea what a jury is going to do.
And all right, Elaine. What is the date? What is the date of the boat crash?
February something, 28th, 2019. February 27th. I think they get in the boat on February 27th. I just off the top of my head, I haven't looked at the date in a while. I think it was February 27th, then the crash happened. The crash happened at 2 a.m. Just a minute. Let me go look it up.
By the way, I went to Luker's the other night, too.
Did you really? I left my credit card at Luther's for 3 days.
When did you do that?
Because I was a dumb, that's why.
Okay, so you guys, look, I'm looking right now at the deposition of John Leroy Keener, and he's one of these, he's a corporal, and he was a witness at the boat crash. So I just want the date of the boat crash, because I actually haven't looked at it in a while. I know you have, Jim, you've read all the depositions of the law officers that were at the scene of the boat crash, and there was some from,
February 24th, 2019.
It was what?
February 24th.
Okay, and so they get in the boat, the whole thing starts in the afternoon, the day, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon the day before. So February 23rd it starts, and February 24th is the date of the crash?
Yeah, so they went out, it was Saturday night, and February 24th is a Sunday.
Okay, so Frank is looking at the charts of the tides. I think that's why he wanted the exact date. That's why I got to get the exact date.
All right, I'm playing. Go ahead.
Okay, so what we have here is just a disagreement about what Paul, what his mannerisms look like. So I was talking to, and Jim, you know this person. She's what I call an expert on what teenage boys or boys in their early 20s think, because she's raised five of them. And so, and she is from the Lowcountry. You met her. You were at her house. You know who I'm talking about. And she agrees with me. And so that's a ding, 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 who cares? But she agrees with me about what Paul looked like in that hearing. So all I'm saying to you is, I know, you know, you and I have talked about this, and you know you and I disagree about Paul's mannerisms and what it suggests. And all I'm offering in disagreeing with you is there are other ways to interpret it. And I interpret it as him being a very confident, well brought up young man who did what he was told, but he does not look afraid. He's doing what he was asked to do. And that was...
we can agree to disagree on this one.
Okay.
Saturday, it was 11:20. High tide was 11:27 p.m. on Saturday night, and low tide on Sunday was at 5:39 a.m.
So at the time...
They hit the dolphin piling at 2:20. I think that's 2:20 a.m. They hit the dolphin piling at 2:21 a.m. That one I have in my hand right there.
So the tide was going low.
The tide was coming in.
Yeah.
The tide was coming
in. But which direction?
No, low was what time?
Is it running toward Buford or away from Buford?
No, it's running towards Buford.
So it's pushing against the boat because the boat is driving away from Buford. Okay, so the boat hits the dolphin piling at 2:20 and impacts the bridge basically at 2:21 a.m.
What time were they at Luther's?
Wait a minute, what?
What time were they at Luther's? Oh. None of this really matters, but...
No, it's here. Just a minute. No, it's right here. It's here. So Connor orders alcoholic beverages for Paul and himself at 1:05. Paul orders beverages... At 12:59, they're at Luther's Wren. Well done. At 12:55,
that makes sense. That makes sense because it's probably about 15-20 minutes from Luther's to get the boat, get back on it, head back over to Archer's Creek. But right.
And you know what I'm looking at? It's the State Department of Natural Resources produced this document. It's a timeline of events, and it's produced from the GPS coordinates from the boat itself. And so this was introduced into evidence. That's why I have it. But it's a timeline of events.
My point is with Paul, even if Paul was not going to say anything about what he knew, about what other people may have done or killed, other people know.
I don't think he was afraid of going to jail. I don't think he was afraid of going to jail. I don't think he thought he was going to jail at all.
Other people know that he has that knowledge. And Frank can tell you, if the mafia knows that you know what they did and you get arrested and they think you're going to talk, what happens, Frank?
No, you're put in a position where you're not going to talk.
Exactly.
No, I think you're heirs. No.
But listen, understand something. The last thing that anybody wants to do is commit a murder because it brings attention to the situation. Intimidation is a silent way of is a way of silencing somebody discreetly.
Sure.
All right.
What if you try to go intimidate the guy with a shotgun, and the guy tells him, you know, hey, screw you.
Well, you don't have. Listen, just let me say this: firearms are not meant to intimidate anybody; they're made to kill people. If intimidation is something that the victim imparts on themselves, all right? But firearms are not meant to intimidate people. They're made to terminate life, all right? So if somebody points a gun at you, all right, you can be scared, but being scared is something that you impart upon yourself. You have to make that assumption that the person that is holding the gun has every intention of killing you because that firearm is intended to kill, not to intimidate.
Yeah, but right? What we do know for a fact is that people were sick and tired of Paul's actions. Patrick Wilson told me that.
Some people love Paul's actions. I'm going to even push back on that. These kids, this idea that Paul...
Not Patrick O'Connor. Not Anthony Cook.
Hello.
Go ahead and tell me that Anthony Cook and Connor Cook and Patrick Wilson and Sean Conley all approved of what Paul Murdoch did. None of them.
They ran to him. Okay, I'm going to.
That's why they stopped talking to him. They cut him off.
The first chance they needed him, when they had a problem. No, they ran
I did
back.
The interview. I heard the words out of his mouth. They cut off
you
Paul Murdoch.
You also heard him say that he went to Paul. When he got in trouble, he went to Paul, and Paul went to his daddy, and
that
daddy
was
said, "Who's my best friend?"
Crack.
Ah, come on. It's the same thing. What he's saying now after the fact.
So I'm not to believe what Connor Cook says. I'm not to believe that Anthony Cook wanted Paul to rot in hell, like he said. I'm not to believe Patrick Wilson. Hey, kids, play nice now.
One at a time. Point A. Point and counterpoint. Point and counterpoint. Elaine, make your point and pause and let Jim rebut it.
Listen, I'll change my position. Paul Murdoch was the greatest person ever. I agree with you.
I'm not saying that either. I'm saying that after the fact, you're talking to let me say it and then you can disagree. I respect your right to disagree. But after the fact, you're talking to Patrick Wilson, a manipulative liar and possibly quite a bit more than that. But I don't buy this narrative that these guys were so offended that Paul got away with things. They loved it that he got away with things. And guess what? Paul isn't alone. Every kid with access to power is getting away with things. It's not just Paul Murdoch. It's absolutely anybody. Arthur's children get away with stuff. Arthur had a son that had issues and got away with it because of family connections. And that doesn't mean... And so maybe his buddy said, hey, we're sick and tired of this guy getting away with it. But first chance that it came up, they're running to him because they want the benefit of those connections. So I know that
Patrick said
that.
I agree with you what you're saying on that. Until the boat crash, because no longer go on what they say, it's what they do. And their actions were none of them associated with Paul. Even Morgan broke up with them. They stopped associating with Paul Murdoch after the boat crash.
Did Paul initiate that? Let's take Morgan out of it, because lots of reasons why she might not have liked Paul. So I'm going to set her aside for a second. Did Paul initiate... distancing himself from Connor and Anthony, which are basically the only two people you're talking about. Did Paul...
Let me answer that with a question.
Oh, did they initiate?
What did they offer Paul Murdoch versus what did Paul Murdoch offer them?
So, who knows? It seems to me that they a lot of Paul's friends seemed to be around him because he was the guy with the toys and the party. But you also, by the way, talking about two people, and Paul Murdoch knew hundreds of people. So you're saying that the opinions of basically two people, Connor and Anthony, are, first of all, their deposition testimony makes what they're saying now, it's inconsistent. They're inconsistent. They were deposed and they gave sworn testimony under oath in January of 2020, and their opinions now are inconsistent with that sworn testimony. So I don't find them credible at all. But to say these two people define Paul Murdoch, or define his relationship with the rest of his friends, we don't know. How many friends did Paul have? Are they two of 20? Are they two of 200? Are they two of 1,000? Are they two of 4? We don't really know. But Patrick for sure has an opinion he wants to tell you about Paul. And he did that. All I'm saying to you is I think your interview with him is outstanding. And it's relevant, and it's powerful. But I like to keep it in this context. It's just one habitual liar, low-level criminal, who's manipulative versus...
Okay, well, you can have that opinion if you'd like, but then I go back to pictures upon pictures upon pictures of all of them together, mainly Anthony and Connor, Paul, and their girlfriends. But Patrick and Sean were there. They lived close. They partied together. They went to school together. They went fishing together. They went hunting together. Their actions, Elaine, it's their actions, and they documented
what
pictures.
What do those pictures show? I agree. Paul was on social media. They hung out together. And then he hung out with other people, too, though. Here's what's incredible.
I'm not saying he didn't. What I'm saying is I have a lot of friends. I know a lot of people, but I only really associate with a small group, and I think that goes for anybody. This was the group.
Oh, you
somebody
think
wants to show me some evidence?
Oh, see, I don't. I get okay. So we have a fundamental disconnect. I think, especially what got introduced, Morgan Dalley, of all people, introduced through Mark Tinsley, introduced on her behalf a bunch of, they were actually videos. So there are photos taken from video clips, and those photos were used, I believe, in the Netflix documentary. And they're images of this partying that's going back years. And what it had to do with was a point Tinsley was making, that Alec Murdoch was and Maggie were providing alcohol and drugs for underage kids, I guess. I don't even get what the real issue was. But clearly, Morgan, from the time she was, I think, 16, was allowed to party and engage in what you'd have to call debauchery with the Murdochs, and that she benefited from it. But I never thought those were the only parties and the only photos. I'll bet you there are millions of photos because Paul and his buddies, everybody, lived online. We just don't have copies of them. So, but you're saying that we should give special weight to what Patrick is saying because you
and
think
Connor.
They're his core friends, Patrick, Connor, and Anthony. Anthony didn't
and
talk like this about Paul.
I mean, he went and to prom. You just don't go to prom with some guy that you know from, you know, whatever. Like, you're going, you go
so
to
who,
prom
wait,
with
who
somebody.
Went to prom? Who went to prom? Who went to prom? Who? What do you mean? Take out the pronoun. Tell me the proper.
Anthony and Valerie, Miley and Connor, and Megan or Morgan and Paul
went to prom together.
Don't tell
so
me that.
Can
Don't
I
tell me that they're not good friends.
I didn't say that. I'm not telling you that. Don't put words in my mouth. I'm saying that I don't think that this is as compelling as you do, and I think that Paul had a lot of friends. They talk about even at the trial.
I agree with you.
At Edistone.
Okay, but this
so I don't
was
know.
The friend group. This was the tight-knit friend group.
Well, no, let's say so you're going to prom with the people you're graduating with, and then you go on to college and
okay.
kind of
I don't know what point you're trying to make anymore. I've lost your point.
I'm going to be real clear on the point I'm making. I don't think that it is as impactful that Patrick and Connor and Anthony, and I haven't heard anything from Anthony, but in this specific, that is as I don't give it the credibility you do. I think these are young kids who are casual with the truth, and this was a
well,
point in their
I
life.
Maybe I can share more of my investigation to you because they were, and they
you're
were tired
saying,
of watching Paul.
Let's
they
talk
were
about
tired
what
of watching
you're,
Paul getting. I'm saying that these kids
and,
get tired
and,
of watching.
I know that's where we okay. That's where you're losing.
You,
that they
you,
were tired
you think
of
that
watching
they,
Paul.
They loved it, and they did up until the boat crash,
and then they said,
you know what, we're tired of it.
No. So you're saying that the fact that they're tired
based
of it...
Based your investigation, you tell me what it was.
Okay. No, I'm telling you based on this conversation, okay? So I play this game with you, you play the game with me, and we can, you know, just throw insults back and forth. That's fine. I'm up. Let's go.
Listen, I love you, and you know it. Go ahead.
So I know you do. So, but this is the thing. Here's the heart of it, is that... We're supposed to make a lot of that they were tired of Paul getting away with things. I don't find them that credible in their lives about anything. I don't think they held any policy that dear, so I don't care whether in a moment they say we were tired of it. You're saying it's really significant that they say that they were tired of Paul getting away with things, and I am saying that it's more like a throwaway line. They may say, yeah, we were sick and tired of it, but what I'm saying to you is that as a reality, they would run to him if they had a problem. So even though they say to you now, even though after Patrick tells him the sick and tired, really? How do we even know that? We don't know that. But anyway, okay. So what? So let's go on. You're saying these kids are capable. That's the other one. Are they even capable of making this kind of commitment? I'm now going to change. Here's the truth. These kids enjoyed getting drunk and acting irresponsibly. But after the boat crash, I'm going to suddenly be very offended that Paul gets away with stuff. Although Paul is not getting away with stuff. As a matter of fact, I think they want Paul.
No,
wait, I'm done.
You've got
to
tie back Stephen Smith.
I don't know you want to, but I don't. They want Paul to take the blame for the boat crash. So who's being manipulated? They're the ones that want to get away with something. These kids want to use their access to Paul, which I believe they've probably done for years and years and years, to get Paul to help them get away with something. It's just the opposite of what you're saying. They're getting away with something. They're going to have Paul take the blame for the boat crash. But I know what you're going to say here because you're going to talk about it.
Feel free to believe that someone who may have killed Stephen Smith is going to allow Paul Murdoch, who could be going to prison, to keep that information with them and just do nothing about it. You're more than welcome to
say that again. No, say that again. That somebody that, because I can't follow that.
Stay with us on True Crime in the Low Country. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.